We have a program today called The Dilemma of Hospital Discharge Planning. And for those of you who come regularly or read our newspaper, you know that this has been a long-running subject of discussion at Cuckoo Council meetings. And we have today Carolyn Cattirau. Did it right? Caroline. Uh-huh. Okay. Couldn't do it right. Caroline Cattirau, Grants Manager for the Executive Office on Aging. And I'd like to ask you to please say a little about yourself, a little about the Executive Office on Aging, and then into the topic. And we have a microphone for questions. You're welcome to use this also if you don't like this other one. Okay.
Sorry. Can everyone hear me? That's good? Okay. Well, my name is Carolyn Cattirau. I am a grants manager with the Executive Office on Aging. Better?
Yeah.
Okay. I hate to use this again, but sorry.
You could use the hand one if it's easier.
No, that's good.
It's okay. Need some okay. Search.
And I've been there now. Marilyn, how long have I been there? Almost 10 years. Marilyn hired me, so it's nice to see some friendly faces here. I know a lot of people on either Pavia. It's great to see Al again. We go back to my days when I was with the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. And just a lot of, and Wes, so good to see you again, too. Executive Office on Aging, for those that don't know, is the state unit on aging. So we are the leader for all the issues that deal with aging. And now we're also, as we're going with our Aging and Disability Resource Center, we're bringing on and working with partners in the community. And I oversee, just so you have a little history, when I first started, I had all four counties. And right now, I'm working basically with Honolulu and Kauai, my two counties that I oversee and manage as a grants manager, along with all the other responsibilities we have with our new grants that we have at the Executive Office on Aging. And those really center around hospital discharge planning, the Aging and Disability Resource Center. We also are starting a community living program that we got a new grant for last year that is going to be started in Kauai, Maui, and the Big Island. So that's basically the ADRC, EOA, and it's becoming a merged thing. I'm so used to saying ADRC when I go out in the community, now I've been saying that more than the Executive Office on Aging. But anyway, I'm here today to talk to you about hospital discharge planning. And Laura and I kind of went 20 rounds on what should we call this topic, because probably in the work that you've done and as advocates in the community, you even know more probably about the problems or issues that surround hospital discharge planning. And you're probably wondering, how does EOA fit into this whole process? And that's what I'm going to talk about today. Back in 2008, we had actually gotten a grant to work on hospital discharge planning. Well, we applied for the grant, but we didn't get the money till last year in 2009, and I'll be going over that. But I think all of us, either through our own personal experiences with family and friends or our own personal experiences being in a hospital, maybe one time or another, have all experienced the process of being discharged from a hospital. It's a fast process. Sometimes you may not go home with the supports that you need. And nationally, 65% of older adults actually are admitted into nursing homes after a hospital stay. So that was actually, I found that last night when I was preparing for this presentation. That kind of alarmed me that 65% of people actually go into a nursing home setting after being in an acute care setting. So, and sometimes it's required that people go into a nursing home, maybe to really stabilize them before they go out back out into the community. But a lot of times they may be better off going home with the supports that they need in order to, so that they can be more comfortable in their own home setting. So that's, sometimes it is required. Maybe they're not stable enough. I've been through this actually with my own disabled son when he wasn't well enough to come home from Kapi'olani, but had to go to a Kulana Malama. It's a nursing facility for medically fragile children. And he went there for 6 weeks, and he was stable enough after that to come home. But it was traumatic for me because they wanted to release him. They weren't going to send him to Kulana. It was like, okay, you can go home. And he was still desatting down to like 30%. And he was having trouble breathing, and it was like, no, he can't come home. You know, this could endanger his life. So luckily we had a good case manager that got us in contact with Kulana Malama. It was a wonderful experience as far as that, going into that facility and then coming home. But it is a traumatic experience, and people are busy. They're trying to get you out of there as fast as they can because costs are involved. You know, people have to come in and out as, you know, they, you know, pardon?
I was just thinking that hospitals are supposed to stabilize.
Right. They tried, but Ryan's a special case. He likes to bend the rules a lot, so. He was supposed to be stabilized, but he kept changing. He was going through a lot of things, I think, physically, too. And so they couldn't figure out why they couldn't stabilize him, and they wanted to send him home. And luckily, he got a really good doctor at Kulana Malama, and he was stabilized. And he's been fine ever since. We've had no hospital stay since then, and he's been actually thriving since that time in 2008. So personally, from that level, I've experienced hospital discharge planning, good and bad. But in the long run, it ended up to be a good thing. But sometimes people don't come out of nursing homes. So, you know, what our goal is really to try to develop a system that can divert what we're calling, well, what we normally think of as an institutional stay. We're trying to call it facility stay now because it sounds not so negative. But we're trying to come up with a system so that we can divert people from a facility in back home into community-based services. So again, just a little background. Like I said, in 2008, we did apply for the grant, and we weren't awarded in the first round. And then last year, in 2009, we got word that we were one of four states. They had some additional monies, and we were one of four states. It was a very competitive grant, and Wes can probably talk about that because he helped to apply for that grant. But it was very competitive. So four states that hadn't been awarded in the first round were awarded back in July of 2009. And the objectives is really to put the patient and the caregiver into the center of the discharge planning process from the beginning, and focusing on discharging patients home with community-based supports so that they can thrive, and reducing the number of patients retained in the acute care beds past the point of clinical discharge, and reducing the number of defaults, people going home and then coming right back into the hospital. That's what we're trying to avoid by putting protocols in place through this grant that we've received. And so, like I said, we were one of four states that got awarded in 2009. So we were very, very excited. But this was July of 2009. Can anyone tell me what happened in February of 2009? I gave you the answer earlier. Anyone want to take a stab? Okay, managed care took over for the those that are on Medicaid. So that was our QXA program through the Department of Human Services. This grant was required to take those that were hospitalized in an acute care setting and Medicaid eligible and divert them back into the community. But now that has become the responsibility of QXA. So then it became, well, we have this great opportunity, we have funds, what are we going to do with these funds, and who are we going to target? I just got over a cold last week, so excuse me. So what had happened was when we've broken into, we actually started a work group, and we've decided that because we can't focus on the Medicaid eligible, we're going to focus on those that are non-Medicaid eligible, and we're going to work with those people so that they don't have readmission into hospitals, and really work with setting up a structure to keep these people out of the hospital and supported with in-home and community-based supports. So in We have the hospital discharge planning grant I told you about, and at the same time, we also were awarded the ADRC expansion grant and the community living program grant that I had talked about. And the ADRC expansion grant requires that we do a 5-year operational plan and budget of how we're going to move forward. Now, is everyone familiar with the Aging and Disability Resource Center for the most part? Okay, because I don't want to go on and then people aren't quite sure what I'm talking about. Okay, so the ADRC expansion grant really is helping us to become what they consider a fully functional ADRC. And there's set criteria nationally of what that entails. And one of those is having options counseling. And those are one of the things that we want to offer people as we're doing hospital discharge planning, is the options counseling to get those supports in place as they're coming out of hospitals and into the community. So what we did was, you're probably wondering, well, you got this grant in July of 2009, and where are you at now? So we took a step back, and we're looking at a holistic approach as we're approaching all three of these grants. And we procured a competitive procurement for a systems change developer that's helping us in writing the 5-year operational plan and budget and moving us forward with all three of the goals and objectives of this grant. And some of you actually participated in our ADRC Recharge conference in April. I see some familiar faces in the group. And then what happened after we procured and we awarded in February of 2010 for the systems change developer, and that's HCBS Strategies under Dr. Stephen Lutzke, is he came in and he did an operational review of where we're at and where we need to be to meet the functional criteria for an aging and disability resource center. And so we looked at the core functions of ADRCs. He looked, and we're working in our work groups on protocols for hospital discharge planning and the community living program, setting up targeting and triaging for people. Like if someone's coming in and they may just have a very mild, they're coming in at any point to the ADRC and maybe they just need transportation or something, but then someone else is coming in and they're in crisis. So that's where the targeting and triaging would come in. And so we're setting up protocols for all of those things. And then we're looking at common tools and intake forms. And then our next goal is really to look at the MIS structure and the financial sustainability. And those are going to be the last two work groups that we're going to be working on in the next 2 months. And the operational plan should be out by October of 2010, so that's in a few months. And what the Administration on Aging has asked us to do is to fold in our operational plan with our state plan. So it really will become our roadmap, because the state plan is what provides us our guidance as we move forward as a state unit on aging. And that's how we monitor our benchmarks as we go through the years. It's a 4-year plan, it's required. And so having the operational plan will really, making it part of the state plan will really give it leverage for us to move forward, especially with both what we have to do for our older adults and those that are disabled as we move forward with ADRC. So you're wondering, how is this relating to hospital discharge planning? Well, the hospital discharge planning work group, we just finished our meetings, I believe it was last week, Wednesday. And what we did is we just looked at what do we need to put into place? What makes sense? How can we work with the hospital discharge planners? Because, you know, they're going along. They're doing their thing day in and day out. They're already working in this system of, you know, discharging people either back into the community or into a facility-based setting. So how can we, what do we have to offer as we move forward with hospital discharge planning? So we looked at, what are some of the things that we can do as the ADRC? One of them is to provide options counseling for people and really putting the patient and their caregivers at the center of the planning process. So we've developed some of the things that we can do at the ADRC and the AAA level, and that's looking at, you know, providing options counseling, like I said, assessments, assisting families to develop and implement a plan And that's, we don't want to duplicate what the hospital discharge planners are doing, but we want to complement and work with them and to be a liaison. And then we're going to provide follow-up to ensure that services stay in place through some period of time as they go back out into the community. And then assistance with making any applications necessary that they may need for public assistance. Maybe they're close to being eligible for Medicaid. So if we can assist with that process, we're currently working and talking with DHS about that and how we can have that as part of our Aging and Disability Resource Center. So though these are the initial works of what we're trying to do with hospital discharge, these are just the beginning steps. You know, we had to make sure that we looked at the whole process as an overall process as far as systems change. Now we're breaking it down by work groups and what do we need to put into place. So now we've kind of some common understandings that we want to do as we move forward. And then what we're going to do is work this into that plan that I talked about, the five-year operational plan. And then we're going to, from there, we're going to move forward with actually implementing. Right now, we're applying for a grant to actually develop the training protocols for options counseling. So once that's in place, and that has a very small window, we're going to do that in the next, if we're awarded this grant, it will be over the next 6 months. So it'll be from October through March. So then the ADRCs will be ready with the options counseling to move forward. Because they're providing options already, but we really want to have a very well-structured program in place as we move forward with the ADRC to be fully functional. So it is still in the initial stages. I told Laura when she had called, well, first she stopped by my desk. And then she said, could you and Nancy come talk about this? And I said, well, you know, we were still, at that point, we hadn't even started our work groups. And I said, well, Laura, I can talk about the grant, but I don't know how much I can provide as far as where we're at. But 4 or 5 weeks, we've made great strides as far as, I didn't go into all the details of all the procedures that we're looking at putting into place. But if you're interested, we do, has anyone gone to the blog spots that we provided? I think if anyone was at the last Kapuna caucus, you can actually listen to the work groups. You can look at the meeting, the agendas and the notes. You can listen to the audio recordings if you want to find out what we're talking about as far as hospital discharge planning. I think it's www.hospitaldischargeplanning.com. It's all one word, hospitaldischargeplanning.com. You can actually listen to all the recordings of the minutes, the meetings that we had. There were 3 or 4 different meetings we had about hospital discharge planning and where we're going with that. And the only problem with the audio, when you do listen to it, you can't fast forward it or rewind it. So these meetings are 2 hours. But if you are that, we do want people that are very interested in this to really go and check out the blog, because as we're going into the implementation phase, you know, we may even need more help with how we're going to implement this. So we do encourage you, if this, I know this is a topic of interest for this group, and as you're moving forward, please, you know, listen, you know, if you're interested, either read the notes that are posted or you can listen to the blogs and just, you know, if you want to participate, you can join plans and project committee for the PAVIA, because they're the ones we're using right now to kind of bounce some of our ideas off of for all of our grants that we've gotten awarded over the last year and a half. So we're moving forward, we're making progress. The pots are all about ready to boil, and now we have to go into the implementation phase. And really, that's the hardest part. It's easy to say, yes, we agree to this, and this. Then it's implementing and making the connections in the community and building those relationships with the hospitals. And that's going to be where the work, that's where the rubber's going to hit the ground and we're really going to start rolling. So we are in the, like I said, initial stages. I wish I had more to offer to tell you what we're doing, but that's basically where we're at now. And I know there's probably a lot of questions that people want to. I'll try my best to answer.
You may have touched briefly on this, but From what I hear you saying, this is going to be primarily working with the patient, and you've not said very much about the hospitals. You know, we've had a couple of ugly experiences gotten into the newspaper lately where people were released from the hospital onto the streets. And so I was wondering, how much are you working with the hospitals, and how much response from them are you getting, or are you that far along in the process yet?
We started with Coral Andrews and HAH, and we've developed rapport with them. At that, after that, we really want to start doing our area agencies, especially Honolulu, has started working with some of the hospitals at their level, the area agency level. So they're developing some of the rapport, which will be good, because as we go to do a statewide plan to move forward, they've already built some of those relationships. So we would probably go in together to discuss that further. But we don't want to take over what they're doing, because that is their job. But we want to be able to offer something that will help to alleviate these people, like you said, going out into the streets or going out and coming right back in because maybe the supports weren't in place for them at home. So,
okay. Thank you. I have a couple of questions, mm-hmm. and both of them may be really way too early about some of the details. But first of all, specifically when it comes to hospital discharge planning, I'm a social worker. I've been a nursing home social worker and a case manager. And I actually have expertise in geriatric mental health. Okay. So from that point of view, mm-hmm. Is there any attention being paid or planned to be paid to the needs of people who have both physical and mental health needs? This to me has been a glaring gap from my perspective in the community. And for example, going to hospital discharge planning, I've had the experience of having the hospital say, oh, no behaviors, very nice lady. And I go and actually talk to the caregivers mm-hmm. at the hospital and find out that they're combative, and or the reason they're not behaving is they're drugged to the point where they're out of it. So I'll let you answer the question about specifically mental health issues, and then I do have another question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the mental health issues, we have heard, because some of the people that sat on the work groups are actually, we had a few hospital discharge planners, and they mentioned, you know, this is an area of concern. So it has been discussed. As far as protocols in place, I think it was addressed, but it is kind of early as far as, because we know that that can become an issue, because they get home, they don't want the person in the home helping them or assisting them.
I think basically the problem is that we don't have any really appropriate resources right now in the state. And so, you know, I don't know if it's something that you guys have any influence on having that developed, but we badly need things like home care people who have mental health background, care homes and foster care homes with mental health as well as medical, and probably at least one. They're talking about a nursing home on the grounds of the state hospital, which is, a positive step. But is there anybody looking at it from the supply side?
I'm glad you brought that up, and I should grab my pen. I know this is being recorded, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I would love to speak with you after.
I know. This would be really we do have some people on our some of our work groups that are, thanks, Marilyn, that are from the mental health field. Eva Kishimoto is she was on our centrality work group, and I think she may have been on the hospital discharge plan. You know, all these groups are running at the same time, so I may think that one person's on a work group and they're actually on a different one. But we have included them. The initial ADRC grant was for those with physical disabilities, but we are moving to include all disabilities. So it is something that we are looking at.
Right now, at the stage of knowing that you need to work on it, which to me is tremendous, because I think I've never seen that before. Okay, my other question, and this is I hope you don't mind my taking your time.
No, no, it's okay.
You talked about the triage situation, and this is not really so, as much the hospital discharge planning as the ADRC itself. The problem is, yes, if somebody comes in crisis and somebody needs help with transportation, you must give your resources to the crisis first. But if you do not have sufficient resources for everybody, that person who needs transportation, their needs will never be addressed until it becomes a crisis. So what is being done at this early stage to determine what level of need is out there in at all levels of acuity so that there's sufficient coverage that if I come in needing transportation, my needs actually will be met.
Right.
So is there, in other words, is there any assessment being done?
I'm glad you asked about that. That's a very good question. I'm glad you brought that up. I just sat on another work group that actually is exploring that. And what we did is we looked at, from the AAA level, from the area agency level, how many staff would it require to be able to complete all these functions, take the crisis, the people in crisis, and take other people, such as the one with the transportation. I'm so sorry about this. But so what they did is they had to look at what's their current structure, how many staff do they currently have, and what do we need to do to address, because we know too, as we bring on the disabilities, we're not just talking aging now.
Mm-hmm.
The size of those people we're going to be serving, whether it's serving directly with a service or just providing enhanced information and referral, is going to increase. So we're looking at, well, what do we need to do to bring the staff up to speed? We're looking at what are their current qualifications and what do we need to, you know, what are their skill set and what do we need to do? Do we need to bring in new staff at the area agency level that have those skill sets so they can do that targeting and triage when the calls come through? So we just spent actually two meetings going over that. So two webinar conferences that just talking about that. And we looked at Kauai, Honolulu, Maui, and the Big Island as far as that. And what we're trying to do is identify, you know, the pie in the sky. Maybe we don't have the money for that currently. And how are we going to fund that? But this is going to help us as we move forward with the finance and sustainability work group that's going to look at, okay, if you have six staff now, but you're saying you need 11, and you need to move them from like high school diploma level to at least a college graduate level, how much money is that going to take? And that's going to become part of the finance and sustainability as we work on the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being addressed in baby steps. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but that's what we're moving towards as we're developing the five-year plan.
Again, you know, I'm glad to know that you're at least aware that you need to do this.
Right. Yeah, actually, it sounds like it's, you know, just something that came to either my head or Nancy's, my coworker's head or within our staff, but it's really just bringing the whole community together and having the people from the different disciplines to say, no, look, you need to look at this. Or you need to look at that. You're only looking at it from an aging perspective. What about those with disabilities? So having the partners on the work groups has been really beneficial. Mm-hmm. And really, even though I have a disabled child, I don't know all I need to know about disabilities. My area of concentration for the last almost 20 years has been aging. That's what I know. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about adults with disabilities at age 21. My son's not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's been really beneficial because people, and some of these conversations have gotten kind of heated, like, well, wait, you didn't think about this and you didn't think about that. So it's been really good because I think it's challenged us to look at different things as we move forward with our plans. So, and maybe it won't all get folded in or all implemented at the same time, but I'm hoping, I do see 5 years from now as being a lot farther than we are now.
Good.
So it's been a very exciting experience. I love these work groups and to learn a lot about what's happening at the different levels.
It's encouraging to know that somebody's at least thinking about these issues and knows what areas need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I know she had a question.
Yes.
Get the microphone, go.
Larry, do you have the mic?
I thought I read recently that the state was developing a geriatric psych facility on the grounds of the state hospital.
I heard that too.
Yeah, and I wondered if that was underway because, of course, speaking from a skilled nursing background, the acutely ill geriatric psych patient is the most difficult admission and caused, I think, a lot of problems between hospitals and nursing homes who felt they were not capable of dealing with this particular kind of patient. So I'm just wondering if how that worked and if that is happening. I felt, I'm retired now, but I felt that, that for a number of years that was a really important priority.
Yeah, I heard that on the news. Was it 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, a little while ago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're closing a charter or forcing out a charter school to do it, and that's the issue. But we really desperately need that facility.
I just spoke with Avalon, and they are going forward. I believe they've been awarded the contract to do that work. And with regards to your question about the, assessing acuity level, my understanding is that's a part of the long-term care commission work. And I thought they were doing a survey, but maybe we can check with Stuart Hull, who's the chairman. They are sending out a survey, and I thought it included assessing acuity levels within the community.
Thank you.
Share a question. I know that just looking at discharge planning from the hospital is a big problem, but also discharge planning in the ER also goes along with that. I was recently in the ER. They thought I might have fractured my hip. When I fell, I couldn't lift my left leg. So they were looking to see where there were beds. They thought they were going to have to admit me. Well, they took all the x-rays and everything, and I had a fractured patella. And so they discharged me. Why? How am I going to get home? I didn't have any money with me. I didn't have my personal phone book or anything with me. And I could hardly walk.
Did they help you, though?
No. Or? Social worker was sitting at a desk. And she looked up and saw that I was dragging one leg and said, and came over and put her arm around me just so I could walk to the desk. And she was the one, and it is a social worker's job as a rule, to help with discharge planning. But nobody had told her what was going on with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was the one that called the cab and then helped me sit outside of the ER on a bench and wait for the cab to make sure that they could see where I was and help me and get me to my home.
That is frustrating. It's something
to...
I had a similar situation, 3 a.m, and they set me out. I thought they were going to admit me. This was years ago. I had hurt my back. And they're basically, well, we'll call you a cab. They drugged me. I'm like loopy. And they put me in a cab and sent me home. And because my husband couldn't come get me and pack up 2 kids at 3 a.m. So I took the cab home and pinched myself the whole way so I wouldn't fall asleep and get home safely. But it is scary. Hi, Wes.
I just have a quick question. You know, you mentioned EOA is applying for a training grant for options counseling. Mm-hmm. And if awarded, it would begin, I guess, October through March. I was just wondering, what's the funding source for that?
That's the one through the Affordable Care Act, the Part B. Right.
Okay.
That's the Part B. So we're doing, Pamela's doing Part A for the MIPA. We're going to do Part B. We're not quite ready to do the Part D, the care transitions, because you already have to have the program in place and running to do Part D. And Part C of that whole big application packet from AOA and CMS is for the money follows the person. And so they have to be the lead to apply for that. So we're still in discussions with them on that. Yeah. You're welcome.
In 2002, my mom fell, and she had to go to emergency at Castle. She stayed there like 3 weeks. And then they said, it's time to discharge. So they said, you have 2 days to find a nursing home because she needs 24 care, hours care. And I got a list of maybe 20-something names. He says, call them and, you know, make your choice. So I did. Is this system still in operation where they would say, you know, you're here long enough. You can't stay here no more. So you go find your own nursing home or other facilities. So, you know, that's part of discharge planning, I would think, right?
Right. And that's so
what is it still the same? What and then what can you do about, you know, making this more, you know, more acceptable and, you know, more humane,
and more streamlining the process and having everybody.
Maybe they should have a checklist to us such as, okay, here are your options. You can go to a nursing home, you can go to a foster care home, and these are the services you can get, or whatever it is, so that these people who are being discharged. Or like in my case, I was responsible for my mom, I would have some knowledge.
Right.
I visited some of these nursing homes that were kind of stinky. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what they were, right? But yet, oh, because I couldn't find any information about these places. Mm-hmm. And there's some legislature that want to prevent us from getting, you know, information on inspection reports online. So what can you guys do about it to make the discharge, you know, more humane, you know, and better able to take care of the needs of people who need help.
Right, and that's what we're building in with this, with the options counseling, is that the options counselor would sit down and review your different options. So, like, nursing home was really, at that point for you, what you needed. They could work with you on trying to help you, you know, find one that's suitable, but not just giving you a list and say, go do it on your own. So that's what we're trying to build into our protocols as we move forward.
What is the system now? Is this the system still as it was 2002?
Well, from the stories that I've heard, I mean, I've heard good and bad. You know, it really, I think it depends on the hospital and the people that are involved. I think some people have probably had some good experiences. And, you know, because I'm not in a hospital setting, I don't want to answer on behalf of hospital discharge planners out in the community. But I think maybe some of the people with, you know, experiences from the past could probably share with you. I have sat in meetings where they've talked about some of the barriers hospital discharge planning from the discharge planning level, but you know, I don't want to speak for those people.
Yeah, just one thing I know it is, many places have a policy that they are not supposed to recommend specific facilities, that they are supposed to simply give you a list and say, here, find your own. Or if they are going to the alternative, what some places will do is they go down the list and take them in turn. And they're, for various reasons, just not even allowed to use their own judgment of which place might be a better choice. Because then it can become an ethical issue where people are taking kickbacks. Yeah. There are situations where they take kickbacks. And so to prevent that, the people who are doing it really just from a desire to steer people to the best possible place have their hands tied. So it's kind of catch 22.
Carolyn, do you have any stats that would give us an idea of the size of the problem? I'm thinking about, you were talking about the non-Medicaid elder population being discharged. For example, can you tell us how many hospital discharges per year there might be in that group? How many of them might represent problematic situations, anything to give us a sense of the size of the problem you're dealing with?
That's a really good question, Tony. I think probably I could probably get those kind of statistics either through maybe Department of Health. I don't currently have any with me, but I could check into that. And how could I provide feedback on that, Gary? What would be the best way to... Okay.
I'll give you my email, and if you send that, I'll put it in with the on the webpage.
So we're looking at size of the product. Mm-hmm.
I have a related kind of question. Mm-hmm. In addition to those stats, do you have any figures on how many people who are rehospitalized after they are discharged as an indicator of the effectiveness of the discharge? And also the second question is, we've heard numerous accounts about people doing discharge planning at the hospital level who have no background or training and are doing this without knowing what services are available in the community and making inappropriate placements. And do you have any of the grants cover training for the case managers there, discharge planners there?
Well, that's a good question. Actual training. No, but I don't remember actual training being written into the grants that we have. But that's a good point that you brought up, Laura, because maybe what we can do is, as we are looking at maybe the training for the options counseling, maybe that could be something that could be replicated with maybe hospital discharge planning, so they're more aware of what's really out there in the community. And but that's a good point that I can take back to the office and share. Yeah, and that too. Number of those readmitted to hospitals. I got that one.
You know, you look at nursing homes aren't the only place for a discharge.
I can't hear you.
Okay. Nursing homes aren't the only place that you can go to. There's also care homes. There's also, go talk to Roseanne and she can tell you about 24-hour care at home. So there are other places that you can go to for care. And some people, it's better to go home if they need skilled nursing or whatever, but to go to an agency and get care at home.
I just wanted to offer you that.
Any other questions? Oh, Susan.
I would just be interested in the funding.
Okay.
Because what I'm hearing here is it's the same old story. Do you cut kids program, or do you cut elderly, or do you cut homeless, or whatever? And this always distresses me, because the thing is, we don't do what we used to do. We used to have actual needs budgets in government and ability to pay taxes. And we got along in some places when we did that.
The question that Tony had posed about how big a problem it is, we have a Medicaid working group that Dr. Fink, the administrator for Medicaid, and the various health plans are involved with. And I thought they said, at least for the Medicaid-related population, it's about a 30% readmission rate, which is not good. That's like one out of three people, you know, after they are discharged from the hospital, they have to actually come back to the hospital. I need to confirm that, but that's what compelled me to be here. I wanted to hear a little bit more about what is happening within the EOA grants, and to see if there is some way to, and you're saying it's more the private pay patients now, since Quest Expanded is in place, your grant is now looking at the non-Medicaid
right.
population. So somehow I think what you're doing and what this particular group is doing, or Dr. Fink and his staff are doing, need to kind of mesh.
We've had discussions over, you know, the whole grant that we got and how we could move forward. But unfortunately, when we went to speak with them, it was right in the middle of that whole crisis with, are they going to consolidate all their offices into that one website? I think it was just one more thing that, you know, maybe the timing wasn't right, but maybe it would require maybe another meeting and to see where we can, you know, work together and move forward on this.
I would like you to actually be a part of the working group, because our task is to actually reduce the costs of Medicaid, not necessarily eliminate benefits,
right.
but to look at ways to reduce the costs. And one of it is the readmission. How do we prevent that from happening? That in itself could be a cost savings.
Do you guys have a standing meeting?
We do have a scheduled two scheduled meetings so far, so I can let you know.
Okay.
Thank you.
The gentleman here spoke briefly to the 600-pound ape in the room. I think, pretty much are all aware that we have an aging population, not only here in the islands, but across the nation, for that matter, but certainly very important consideration here in the islands. It's going to cost more and more money. I don't know where you're getting these grants from. Are these federal funds?
These are federal grants from the Administration on Aging and CMS.
Even then, this money that's going to be required in ever larger amounts are going to have to come from taxes. And taxes have been, the word has been made a four-letter word, primarily by people who don't know how to read, because it's a five-letter word, but it's not a bad word. And I think that we're going, however much we may want not want to face that reality, I think we're going to have to encourage our lawmakers to bite the bullet. This need is there, it's growing greater, and somewhere along the line, we're going to have to convince people in the community that these things are going to have to be paid for, all of them. And that's not an easy sell. Nevertheless, I think that we're going to have to do that job. Because if we don't convince them that we're willing to acknowledge that need, and for some of us who, you know, a lot of us are on the fixed income, we're going to have to dig a little deeper, because this is a reality. We are the community that is going to be most impacted by these lack of funds. And I think we're going to have to take the leadership in influencing our lawmakers to change this mindset. Thank you.
I have a question, if I may. Yes. Speaking of discharge planning, you remember, I don't know if you saw the film Graying of
right.
Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and partway through there, Queens Hospital discharged a number of people to Ohio.
Right.
So I didn't know about that at the time. I didn't know about that until the film was being made. But what I did is I went to the Lieutenant Governor's website, and I looked around the administrative rules and to look and see what rule allows a hospital to discharge somebody to another state, for example, or if there's anything around administrative rules. And I didn't find anything. So my question is, what is the regulatory framework that governs how discharge planning takes place? And if there isn't any laws or rules in place, then shouldn't there be?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it as far as like regulations, but that's, I don't know if anyone else could touch on that as far as either the HRS or the Hawaii administrative rules as far as discharge planning.
Yeah, well, It could be that I didn't find anything because there isn't anything.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. We had a number of lawsuits against the state recently for not having administrative rules for what it did. For example, cutting off microlesions from dialysis and chemotherapy. No administrative rules say you could do that. Elections, transmitting data with voting machines. No administrative rule says you could do that. And there was just a suit filed by Hawaii Disability Rights against QECSA for something that they couldn't do because there's no administrative rules. Oh, for cutting mental health services.
Oh, okay.
And mental health services are about to be, adult mental health services are about to be transferred to QECSA. Again, I didn't see any rules saying that that could be done. Move responsibility for patients from the Department of Health to DHS. So maybe, I don't know, I'll turn my question into a suggestion. Maybe your task force ought to also check and see whether you can actually do what it is that you're hoping to do under our current regulatory structure, or if you need to create new regulations.
I know our consultant has said, you know, as we're developing the plan, one of the questions as the plan's going to unfold is, does this require some kind of regulation or some kind of, you know, statute or rule or something? So I think it's in the back of our minds as we're moving forward with the plan. Where that would fall into place, I'm not sure. But yeah, some of them may require, or does it require amending some kind of rule or statute that's currently in place? So for the whole operational plan.
It's been a very interesting experience these past few years. I have talked to the Attorney General's office on a number of different issues where, as a legislature, we didn't authorize the expenditure of funding for certain things. But when I asked the deputies, why is it that it's permissible? They said, well, the legislature said you couldn't use it for that purpose. And I said, that means I have to anticipate every single decision of the administration to spend it on something that I think we never thought that it would be spent on. So it's been very interesting. So to answer Larry's question, I don't think we have a statute about discharging or what have you, but if there's no law that says you can't do it, then it probably can do it. So that's something we had asked the Attorney General's office actually to opine on and provide us with an opinion. We haven't gotten it for several months already. So if we are clear of what we need to do, then I think as a community along with policymakers, we need to be very clear about what we should be doing and then put it in statute.
There were several instances where nobody notified the families of those patients that they were transferred. And I was wondering whether this particular discharge program would at least have that kind of leverage to notify them. Where's my uncle, etc.? We found somebody that, we didn't find somebody, even to this day. What care home is that? They won't release that. Although the nephew is incapable of asking that question, we thought maybe his mother would be able to. She has no blood relation to that uncle. And so there's, to this day, they don't know where he's at. And the hospital would not release that. And he's a social worker. Only when he passes away, then they'll notify whoever is the next candidate. So that's the answer they got from the administration. It's very interesting.
That's part of the plan, is to, you know, have the family involved from the beginning.
Sorry, just a suggestion on that issue. Because of confidentiality, they cannot release that information to anybody but the responsible party. However, in many cases, you can ask to have a message sent to the person saying that you would like to be in touch with them. And then if they care to, they can get back to you. just as an example, when I've worked in a substance abuse program, we had an inquiry for, I hear so-and-so is in your program. We actually had taped to the phone the words, "I cannot confirm or deny that this person is in our program. However, if you would like to leave a message, if that person is here, I will see that the message is given to them." So it's just a question of whether the person you're dealing with is able to pass that message on that you're looking for them. And that might be a better way of getting information.
Point is, the uncle who was transferred has Alzheimer's, so he wouldn't be able to understand what they're trying to relate.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they will only contact this particular party only to catch us away. That's the only answer they got.
Yeah. Who is the responsible party?
It's the nephew that was incapable of conveying the message to whoever was at the hospital. It's very frustrating. Nobody can step in and ask them.
You know, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
We're listening to all this conversation, and there's nobody that can help.
If the person who is the legal contact is not mentally competent, so if that person who is theoretically the contact person is not competent to carry out the duties, then it might be a matter of requesting the courts to provide a guardian. And that might be somebody at the office of the public guardian, or it may be a matter of having somebody else declared the surrogate. There's a number of options that might be available if the person who theoretically has the responsibility is not in fact capable of carrying out the responsibility.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's always good to have social workers and RNs.
I can't help it. I have to answer
just comes
the
out. No, it's good to have them in the room. They always have that firsthand knowledge and experience.
Questions? One last question.
Actually, it's more of a comment, Caroline. Good job. I'd just like to very briefly address the money issue. You know, there have been a lot of studies done, and we have one of the most inefficient healthcare systems in the world. It simply is horrible in certain areas, it's wonderful in certain areas, but it's far too costly. And if we had just the same amount of money and we had a more efficient way of handling people and handling their illnesses, we could do so much more with what we have. We wouldn't have to raise taxes to do that. And I'm not against raising taxes. However, I think that we have a program like this that's trying to make up deficiencies because it's not working. The hospital discharge planning system is not working. That's supposed to start before admission. It's supposed to go all the way through, and it's supposed to carry the person out, and it doesn't. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And I'm not just blaming discharge planners.
Uh-huh.
But then you have another program like Kapuna Care, and you have, you know, Medicaid that's operating out there totally separately. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And so you come along with little programs like this that are trying to make up those deficiencies and pick up a part here and a part there. And that's characteristic of this entire system. It simply is not working, and the communication is extremely poor.
Uh-huh.
And so it makes you wonder what we need to do to completely overhaul this entire system.
Yes.
The problem is, it's not that the right hand doesn't know what the left is doing. It's that the right and left hands hate each other and are fighting for the resources.
And they don't want to know.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for a very informative presentation. For coming today.
And I do have those points that I'll get back.
All right.